What does RPA stand for?
RPA is short for robotic process automation. Okay. So I spell it out like that. I don't tell you a damn thing. Right. So think about it as coding, right? What is coding? Coding is literally just writing instructions to a computer to get it to do in a certain way. The average person doing RPA development today makes $130,000. They work from home. They're working less than 20 hours.
So what do you say to people that's watching this right now saying he's lying or he's capping?
If you think I'm lying, I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I do not care. If what you're doing is working, keep doing it. And if it's not, maybe you want to look at what I'm doing. If you look in the Bible, it says that we are made in the image of God, right? So if I am made in the image of God, then that means I am a God. Yeah, yeah. If I say I'm a nigga, they don't care, right? They don't bat an eye. But if I say I am a God, it's like, who do you think you are? I love me. Right? And if my job is to become more Christ-like, right? That means that my job is to become the best version of myself that I possibly can.
Man, tech is moving so fast right now. I just heard about this guy who's making a lot of money, but he's trading a lot of his time for that. He doesn't get to see his family or his kids or anything. He's running a six-figure business, making plays remotely from his laptop. So if you're already making good money, but want more freedom, then this may be the opportunity for you. Your woman is holding it down. You never get to see your kids, and it just feels like it's an ever-ending cycle. But when was the last time you felt free? Here's the move. RPA University is the simplest, fastest way to transition into tech, land a remote six-figure job, and reclaim your time. No going back to school, no certifications up front, just a proven path to get hired fast in robotic process automation. Automating repetitive tasks companies don't want to pay employees to do anymore. The founder, AD, made over $1 million with RPA, and he's helped plenty of other men, husbands, and fathers make that transition too. His system worked, you stay earning, but now you're present. You travel, you invest in your family, you're in control. So if that sounds like what you've been waiting for, here's the next step. Click the link in the description of this episode to schedule a screening call with RPA University. It's time to get your time and your life back. Welcome back to episode 167 of the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and today we got a great guest for you, none other than AD, the RPA guy. You might be thinking, what is RPA? I was thinking the same thing when I first heard it. RPA stands for Robotic Process Automation. And in today's episode, AD is going to explain to us something about his early life, where he chose to major in college, his views on some political things in the world, network marketing, and why he decided to get into RPA. And not only that, how he can help you get into RPA as well, where he's taking people with no experience and help them transform their lives. In this episode, you're going to see how your mindset is possibly limiting your belief to live a better life and give a better life to your friends and family. So if you're ready to get in the episode, all you got to do is one thing. Hit the like button and enjoy the show.
Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. And we got a different guest for you guys today. His name is Augustic, the RPA guy, Dunbar. And today he's going to show y'all about RPA, and I'm going to learn about it myself as well. But if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other type of podcast service, leave us a review and share it out. And if you're on YouTube, all you really got to do is hit the like button and share it out. And if you're watching the premiere right now, just share it out to some more people. You know what I'm saying? Most of the people that subscribe, for whatever reason, are not getting notifications. So make sure when you hit that bell icon, you have all click when you subscribe to the channel. So you can just check out everything that we're dropping. But what's going on, man?
I'm good, man. I'm super excited to be here. I've done a few podcasts, but like rarely do like we have time like to really like get into any detail or any substance. And from all of your content that I've seen so far, like you strike me as a genuine person. Like you're the kind of person who says what they mean and mean what they say. So I'm the same way, and I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like people know. We talked before you came on, like, people don't just come on the show. Mm-hmm. I've had some people that's, like, sent emails, like, oh, I want to come on, but I've seen them on other pods, but, like, I don't even want to respond to you. You're not coming on.
Wait, so what do you see that makes you say, like, nah, bro, I don't even want to do it?
So one particular guy was on another podcast, and I didn't like his business model because I felt like it was fugazi, and the stuff I heard them say on the podcast was fugazi. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't challenged. So I was just like,
Wait. I'm a stickler about words. So when you say fugazi, can you simplify that? What do you mean?
When I say fugazi, I mean it's fake. It's not real. Okay. Remember we was talking about the mm-hmm. people with the fake testimonials?
Okay. Yeah.
It looked like people reading off the thing.
Got it. And you know, so you're saying they're lying. They're not genuine. They're not honest.
I'm just going to say they're not all the way being truthful.
Got it. So it's a mixture of the two. It's not 100% genuine.
Yeah. Because it's like,
yeah.
like I said, nobody in their right mind, unless you knew the CEO of a company, gonna go from driving Uber or a cab to being a pen tester.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not happening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And so if
I got you.
If I don't, then after that, if I'm saying, oh, what? How? Tell us about some pen test engagements, and you never ask that question. And you just go on to how you're just going to get people.
Is about perception and positioning and making you look like you are something or are capable of something that you've never really. I got you.
Contrary to popular belief, like I watch probably like the least amount of tech content only because I try to keep true to my style.
Mm-hmm.
I watch more of the stuff outside of tech to pull in different ways of how I can attract different people.
Yeah.
That may not be privy to different things in tech. So like, for example, EYL was big at one point in time, but they started getting called out because they was bringing on scammers.
Oh, okay.
Like people like Him 500 and all these guys. So it's just like start making their brand credibility go down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm like, okay, I got to see like who these people are and who vouches for them.
Got it. I got you.
What are they actually talking about? Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody could talk a good game, but I really need to listen to what you say.
Mm-hmm.
And when I don't see that and I can't see a challenge and just based on how you market, I'm like, now, there's some people out there who I didn't really agree with all their marketing, but I do know success stories from their programs that maybe one day they can come on here and, you know, I've kicked that back in a couple of times, but I think if me and that person could have like a show where people see like I've disagreed with some of the things they said, but yet they probably make a believer out of me, maybe my audience,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a good show. So
yeah, so you're even open to having your views changed.
Yeah, you know, as your old mentor say, I'm mm-hmm. open to the possibility of being wrong.
For sure. For sure.
But AD, man, can you just briefly introduce yourself to listeners?
Yeah, bro, I do a lot, so it's kind of difficult. I wear a couple of hats. So one, I am the founder and the owner of RPA University, and we're going to get an RPA here in a minute. So basically, I hope men and sometimes women, I prefer to work with married men because they're serious. They've got the most going for themselves, right? Get into tech starting from zero, like starting from nothing. We talked about this. I prefer to work with people who have no tech background whatsoever because they don't come in as if like they know everything, right? They're not arrogant. They're very humble. They're very coachable. And I have mentors. Like I spent over $100,000 last year on mentorship, right? And I'm coachable. So like I want to work with the kind of people who are as coachable as me. Like I try to be the kind of student that I want to attract, if that makes sense. Right. And then, with all of the newfound time and money with, like, cause there's a difference between getting like working in tech and then like finding your path or your position in tech where like, okay, I can do this. I enjoy doing this. I don't hate my manager. I don't, cause that's different. I've been in tech for over a decade, but I didn't get to a position where like I was good at what I was doing. I was being praised for what I was doing, and I found what I was doing to be effortless until I got into RPA, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so with all the new time, found time and money and energy and all that, and after doing a bit of job stacking and things like that, I started a coaching business, right? Or a relationship coaching business, masculinity coaching business for men. I really do believe that we live in a time today where femininity is praised and almost like elevated, and masculinity is like demonized and punished and things like that. And I'm very much pro man. I'm pro masculinity. I'm pro do what you want to do, live for you, not for your family, not for your kids. Love them, do for them too, but do for them from the place of I'm doing for them because I desire to, not because society expects it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm gonna say you must have been listening to Anthony Mackie lately.
I honestly have no. Who's that?
So that's the dude, you know, that plays Captain America. He was
What
he played. What he been in a lot of movies though. Anthony Mackie.
I know he's the new Captain America, right?
Yeah,
bro. I'm gonna say this, I've not heard anyone else say this, bro. Racism is alive and well, right? And I don't really care about racism. It's gonna be here. To live in a time where we have a black Captain America, I think that's a big deal. I don't think people or the powers that be, like, I think having a black Captain America is a bigger deal than having a black president, almost. Mm. Like, it's because, like, you got to think about, like, what Captain, this is Captain America.
Yeah, but I mean,
America.
So, from
fictional,
from brief research and some of my friends who really be in the comics, there was like, mm-hmm. this is kind of like an adaptation of what was in the comics.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say the thing that'd be bigger than the Black Captain America would be, well, two superheroes would be bigger than that.
Superman
or Batman.
I got you.
And okay. Technically, Superman should be a black superhero, technically, because, I mean, Kal-El, power from the sun, all that good mm-hmm. stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah.
But no, I'm with you on that. And you know what? I really just thought about when you said, like, you know, either a married man or maybe a man relationship
mm-hmm.
or someone with the family would be a little bit more serious about it because they got to go out there and get it.
They got more to lose.
Yeah. So, you know what? I didn't really think about it like that, but when you think about it, you're right, because I think about some of the guys who've been really successful lately, either been marriage-minded or had a family, and they mm-hmm. was like, we was coaching every day.
Mm-hmm. You know what
I'm saying? They was like, listen, I got to get it for my kids.
Yeah, it's a necessity. It's like when I was single, bro, I had an apartment with a mattress on the ground. You know what I'm saying? And it just couldn't tell me nothing. I don't care. Like, it's good enough for me. But then you start like, I don't want my son to have like this. I don't want my daughter. You know what I'm saying? I want them to have things. And you know what I'm saying? And for that reason, there's now more required of me, therefore I do more.
Sure. All right. So just to get back into the weeds a little bit of everything, brief background, I guess, on, because when we talked, I made an assumption that I guess you weren't from Texas, or are you from Texas?
I was born in Michigan, but raised most of my young childhood in Houston.
Okay.
Houston, and like back and forth between Houston and Texarkana.
Got it. So you moved from Houston, I guess, maybe going into college when you went to UNT?
Yes. Yep, exactly. Yep. And I've basically been in the DFW area ever since.
Okay. Just brief on like UNT. I know you studied computer science.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? And I guess also, you know, being from the South, what made you want to get into computer science?
Yeah. So you said, what was my career at UNT like? And then what made me want to get into computer science, correct?
Well, yeah. Actually, we could say what made you want to go to UNT and then what made you want to choose computer science.
For sure. So a couple of things. So my dad, I tell people, you got to see my parents in a room together. Like, they've never been married. They've only been on again, off again with each other and all this other stuff. But my dad basically, let him tell the story, and he be lying sometimes. So, not lying, he exaggerates the truth is what he does. And it'd be funny, so I don't call him out on it, but he know he be lying. And, he said he went to college, right? And I think he, like, a community college, and he said he would like bring me with him. And I think he said he ended up getting kicked out of the class. And he said when he would bring me with him, like, all the ladies would be like, oh, look at him, he's so cute. And he'd get all the attention, right? And I think he said he either slept with the instructor or tried to or something like that. And so for that reason, he got kicked out, right? And so he would always say, like, you know, and he also was prior military, right? And he went to the military back during the time. And maybe this is still happening to now, I don't know. He would be like, I didn't go out of choice. I was getting in a lot of trouble. And it was either jail or the military. So therefore, he went to the military. And so he didn't go very far, like, collegiately speaking. And he would always say, hey, you're going to go to school, get good grades. And as long as you do something with math, you should be okay. Right. And that is true. I think long as you do something with math and it's not like necessarily like a math teacher. Right. Like, you're going to be okay. And so I did that. And fortunately, man, I have an older cousin or I guess you call, I call him a cousin. I've got like family friends that like I've known.
It's a black thing. We know.
Yeah, bro. It's like I can't remember a date and time in which I didn't know them. Like, that's how long I've known them. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of just copy this guy, like, everything. Like, he played basketball, I played basketball. Right. He went to UNT. So I went to UNT. He was a Kappa. And bro, I just knew I was going to go to this, and he would come back, you know, over the summer or whatever, and just tell me about all the stories. I'm like, ah, bro, I can't wait. I'm about to. Side note, I got there and the Capitals were kicked off the yard by the time I got there. I was so hurt, so disappointed. But yeah, man, he started a career, or he went down the software engineering track. So I kind of did the same thing. And I'll never forget, it was one summer, like, he had wrote like a program in the command prompt, and it would just like ask me my name and my age. And when I put the wrong age, the prompt would say, like, that's not true, that's not your age. And I put the right age, it was like, oh, okay, cool, that is your age. And that was really, really cool, right? And so I kind of just followed him, and he ended up taking his career path down like the Android development, right? He started doing Android development back, I think, in like 2005, before it even became big. Smart. Or maybe it's 2008. Like, I think Google acquired Android in 2005 and he was doing it in 2008. And he got to the point where, like, he would tell me, now again, I'm at the point in my career where, like, I hate what I'm doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is, I'm doing the software engineering thing because it pays well, but it's not that I hate software development. It's, I hate that I have to keep learning new things. I have to learn this language and then 2 years later, absolutely, screw that language, I got to learn something else, right? And I hate all the managers I'm working with. I'm working in downtown Dallas at the time.
Oh, so
hate where I'm working.
So that's the
that, oh, that's part of it. Oh, absolutely. Bro, when I pulled up down here today, I was like, bro, I love that I'm back on my own terms. Like, I'm back to do this, right? Which I enjoy this, but like, it was terrible, bro. I was working at a big, large corporation. You can probably guess which one it is. 250,000 employees. And I thought that I disliked corporate America, but what I realized is I disliked working in that department for that manager at that company, right? I've had stints at other companies, much smaller companies, where I'm doing just RPA, and I enjoy it. I love it. They love me. But to get back to your question, he went down the path of Android development, and he got to the point where he had people reaching out to him on LinkedIn about projects, and he was like, if it's not fun to me, I turn it down. Right. And I'm like, imagine like me getting to a place where like, if I don't enjoy, it ain't about the money. If I don't enjoy the work, I'm not doing it. It blew my mind. Right. And so I kind of just copied him. We had a conversation and I asked like, how did you get there? How do you do that? Cause I want to find a career space. I don't want to do Android development, but like, I want to find my niche where like I can turn down projects that I don't want, right? And it just so happened to be RPA. And so I took his playbook. I did exactly what he said to do, and that's kind of where I am now. Like, I get reached out to about stuff, but it's like, I enjoy running my business. So if it's not going to pay me more than my business and I don't enjoy the work or the people, then I typically turn it down.
Okay. Out of curiosity, did you sign an NDA with that company you didn't like?
No.
What was it?
What do you mean? Like the company? Yeah. The name of the company?
They need the name, man.
I don't need. Well, here's the thing. It's on my LinkedIn. It's out there. It's publicly available. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I gain anything by saying their name. And at the same time, I have mentors at that company, right? So if they were to reach out and be like, hey, would you do, like, we'd love to. Sure, I'll do it. I'm going to do it on my own terms, though.
Got you. Nah.
Great company, by the way. It's just, I don't work well in large organizations with like 250,000 employees. That's what, so it's not them, it's me. I just think that kind of organization, like, you're not able to be, like I said earlier, genuine, honest, straightforward. They're going to want you to do what's in the best benefit of the company. When I'm a grown ass man, bro, I'm going to do what's in the best interest of me and my family. And that should align with what's in the best interest of the company.
Yeah. And there's definitely a lot of companies like that, especially down here. So I get it. Like I said, it's fun doing a name dropping thing because, like, you just got to stand on what you said and just know you probably never work there again. Because, like, I know people, like, I made a video about when I quit Goldman Sachs. I haven't unlisted just because, like, if I'm ever interviewing with other people, I don't want them to see it. But, like, I went in. Like, I went in so much to where they was talking about it at the office. I got a homie that's still there now, and he was like, bro.
At the Goldman Sachs office?
Yeah. It's
interesting.
It's like 5 minutes away.
Right? Okay.
He was like, bro, I agree with everything you said. Mm-hmm. He's still there, though. But I was like, yeah. I'm like, you know, I always tell people, like,
yeah,
pros and cons. You'll get compensated well. Con is they very lean. So it's like, and then, you know, you got to adapt their mindset. Or, like, you'll either be miserable or you won't be that long. Or maybe you can get fired if you don't do good. So,
mm-hmm. And that's what it is, bro. And a lot of people don't want, respect to you for being upfront and honest about that. I go to like these tech events, like all these, we're like the Ernst & Youngs and all these, the Deloitte's and all that. And I take my group of people from RPA University with me. And like, we meet these people and I'm like, okay, yeah, so-and-so works for this company. Like, imagine it's me, a student, and this really happened. Me, a student, and a young lady from like one of those big consulting firms, right? And we're talking and my student knows nothing about the tech industry. He knows RPA and that's about it. And he's just taking everything in. And we're talking to her and like, she's giving answers and I can tell she's giving very corporate-ish answers. And I don't know if he can tell or not. And I'm just like, look, bro. And I say this in front of her, like, that company, you're going to get paid very well, right? But you're going to be put on flights. You're going to travel 5 days a week. You're barely going to see your family and your kids. They're going to work you. You're going to gain a lot of experience, but you're going to burn out within 2 to 3 years. Like, that's, she's not going to say that, but that's what it is. Or I said, that's what I've been told. What are your thoughts? To her, right? And then she gave a roundabout ass answer, and then we ended the conversation. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, it, nothing, those environments aren't for me. I know I'm not going to do well in that.
Yeah, and I think most of the time, sometimes in those situations, maybe sometimes the person you're talking to hadn't even reached that level where they have to do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there is some where it's all that type of stuff. And the biggest thing that comes with that, and I'll say for us, because I've noticed like some situations with us in the Big Fours, is I think we reacted to like this black girl who got fired from like, I think it was like Deloitte. Mm-hmm. I think she got laid off from them. And we reacted to that. And I had a friend that's working at EY. The biggest thing is like boundaries. Like,
mm-hmm.
you got to come in and establish boundaries. And just being honest, you can do good work, but you don't want to do so much good work to where they feel like you can handle all the load. Because my friend at GS, that's how he is. He's so mm-hmm. good that, like, low-key, he's doing the job of, like, 3-4 people.
I don't believe in it. I don't believe in it.
So, but the pro and the con of that is, like, you get so much experience that you just, you know, put mm-hmm. notches in the belt. So now you probably can go specialize and do way less work
mm-hmm.
somewhere else. That's mm-hmm. So environments like that, I say, hey, go in.
For short-term
yeah, purposes. A year or two may give you a boost for of, sure. like, 3 to 5 years worth of experience just because yeah. of environments you're in.
Yep.
So I tell people be strategic about that.
For sure. I agree with that. I just think it's hard to set boundaries at a company like that when the expectation is you finna come in here and work your ass off. Like, that's just what it is. Yeah. Like, you're going to be working weekends. You're going to be working evenings. Like, it's an unspoken rule almost. And here's the funny part. When I got into art, so I also have a stint in network marketing. So I did that for like 6 years.
Oh, that's, right? Look. Hang on. That's fun. So we definitely could talk about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, for sure. And so I was used to working nights and evenings and weekends and all that, right? And then I got into RPA and I was like, there was like one particular instance when we were working on a big project with Sprint. They were trying to get like 50 automations out in like 6 months or whatever. It didn't end up happening, but we got really close. And I was working on Saturdays and something, but I enjoyed it, right? So the network marketing like set me up to like enjoy working and things like that, but it needs to be something that I enjoy doing.
For sure. So I think there's like, cause we got to build the steps out. So I know you did software development. What was that? That was like what? 2012.
Yeah. So I graduated from high school in 2010, graduated from college. I tell people I got a 5-year degree in 3 years. Cause I did like it was technically 4, but like I got started May. August 2010, mm-hmm. 2011, right? Because you, damn.
I graduated. I went into school at LA Tech in September 2010 and finished November 2013.
I got started in college. It was definitely August. It was either 2010 or 2011. Walked across the stage in like May or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, it hadn't been a full 4 years. It was like 3 years and 9 months. But it's if you look at the little guideline that they give you, it's a 5-year degree. It's supposed to take 5 years. But I never took breaks. Like I went spring, fall, winter. So like I did not, I was taking classes all year round because I ain't want no money where I came from. So it was like, go back home to what, for what?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But that being said, I had an internship my sophomore year. Yeah, I was working at IBM. I was working for SoftLayer, and then I got acquired by IBM. And that job was, I was a front-end and back-end software developer. And so technically, that's where I say, I graduated college in 2014. So that internship starts at 2012, gotcha. Right? And I had an internship every summer after that. So yeah, I saw people,
that when I was just
yeah, bro. Saying, so. By the time I got to my first corporate job, like 40-hour week, they were like, bro, you've worked a lot of jobs. And I'm like, yeah, I have a son. I got to get it.
Sure. So I know you said you took his playbook to do RPA, and so that was after the IBM stint.
Yes. Cause I think by the time I had that conversation with my cousin, like I was already in RPA, but I was just working it and it was the first time I had a job that I enjoyed.
Okay.
Like I do this. And then when I realized, oh, he's doing his job and then has contracts coming in too. That's kind of okay. Where I was. Yeah.
Cool. So we'll get to that. I want to have some fun now.
Okay.
And talk about you doing this network marketing.
For sure,
MLM
for sure.
Stuff.
For sure, man. Funny enough, I'll just say the name of the company. I was at AT&T, right? And that's what I was in network marketing during that time as well, right? And so, in looking back, I'm all about accountability. And looking back at it, I can understand. They didn't like me. I didn't like them. I was running around trying to recruit everybody on the floor. You know what I'm saying?
To which one?
Are you familiar with Patrick McDavid?
So he's doing PHP.
I was a part of PHP. Yep, yep.
And it was something funny.
What?
I didn't do it, but I signed up like 2019. I signed up because I actually did want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
But then,
boy, it's not for the faint of heart. It takes effort.
Well, it wasn't that. Once I realized, hey, I can't even focus on passing because you want me to bring people to these events two times a week. I was like, I'm out. Y'all just like Primerica.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't take me long to realize, like, yeah, same, different name, same business
what
model.
What office were you in?
This was that office. It was over there off of Parkwood.
You said 2019?
Yeah, this was like.
So there was, I was 2019. What month in 2019?
I couldn't tell you. It's either late 2018, early 2019.
I got out of PHP in 2019. I was there from 2014. Like, literally, I graduated, started working, went to, like, a speed friending event. I don't recall. I was drunk. I was tipsy. Went to a speed friending event, and I remember the young lady who recruited me. I just call her my upline. I don't even call her by her name. I'm just like, even we were hanging out, like, 3 weeks ago. I was like, hey, what's up, upline?
These people probably listen, like, man, what is an upline? The upline is that person that probably would recruit you,
Yeah. I signed under her, right? And I tell people I never went to the military because my dad told me don't go, right? But I tell people that PHP was like my military boot camp, like, experience, like the amount of personal development, the amount of growth, the amount of books, the amount of, like, hardship that I had to go through, like the amount of damage to my fucking ego. Okay. That happened while in that business. It was transformative, bro. Like I would not be who I am today if I didn't do that stint there. Right. And I didn't kill it. Like, I didn't make a whole lot of money. I think I made like $25,000 at most in a year doing it part-time-ish, full-time-ish, because I hated my job at AT&T so much that I was just like, fuck it, I'm out. I'm quitting, take this little severance package, and that didn't go well. Got my car repossessed, credit got tore up. Thank goodness I fixed it recently. But, yeah, man, it was a great experience. It was a great experience. I got to meet Patrick McDavid. I've got several pictures with him. If he were to see me today, and, like, he knows me, he knows my name. I don't know if he remembers me, but we've met several times. And in 2019, if I recall, there was only one office in Dallas. So it had to have been in the office that I was in.
Was it the one in, like, kind of like close to Legacy?
Yes. Yep.
Up Parkwood?
Yep. Yeah, yep. Yeah, that was the second office. So the guy, his name is Jason Graziani. Great guy.
Listen, I'm going to keep it a bean. They are in there, and because, so here's my gripe, and you'll see why people say, like, a straight shooter, whatever. Like,
yeah,
I correlate a lot with what a lot of, you know, coaches, influencer programs do with MLM content.
Mm-hmm.
And because it goes at you psychologically, like what you're going through, and this and that, and I tell you a feel good story,
yep,
to get you there and say, you know, I have, you know, all the six figure earners and all the type of stuff is like, why y'all sharing offices? Like, I just know different things. Like their PHP wasn't as egregious as Amway, though. Amway, I have a person that I know for a fact doing construction work, talking about he on a stage in a black tie, a six-figure earner. Or this person talking about his mentor. One, a matter of fact, at Amway, the dude that tried to recruit me, his upline was from AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, bro, these people not retired either. What y'all talking about? Like, why y'all think I'm working on that? I think the funny thing that I have fun with now, my LinkedIn messages, is if a person is trying to get me to do affiliate marketing, I mean, not affiliate marketing, network marketing, and they don't say it. And then, so they'll say some verbiage like, oh, I want to know if you're interested in business opportunities, yada, yada, yada. And then that's when I
say, it's always real vague how they approach
it. And I'm like, oh, what MLM you working with or whatever? And they might say something, oh, you heard of us? I'm like, fam, don't nobody just come out of nowhere and say, I want to do business with somebody. Like, that's kind of like all the red flags start hitting you later on. Like, nobody does that. Yeah. Now, you do have to pay to set up your own business, but it's yours. Mm-hmm. You're not, because technically you're really a contractor when you work for these people.
Mm-hmm.
But they say, oh, you're a business owner, but you're not a business owner. Mm-hmm. Like it's like, so like I plan to actually do like a live stream about like the couple of MLMs. Like I've did, like I did one time, I did World Ventures for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
You should be here. You know about mm-hmm. them?
I've heard of them. Yeah.
They
got, were real big at one point.
Yeah, they were big. And then it's, but it's like, it's stupid too, because the deals they were trying to give people, you can get better on Expedia. And then mm-hmm. that's when I started seeing, oh, we partnering with all these companies. No, y'all not partnering with these companies. The same rewards programs you can sign up for at your regular job. Like, mm-hmm. it'd be a whole lot of finessing that they do. Mm-hmm. And you realize that, hey, if you're the person that started it, you could be straight, but then you're going to run into some issues eventually, because
mm-hmm.
it takes for a while. Like, you got to be like Mary Kay and Avon to last this long.
Mm-hmm. I'll say this. It's going to be highly dependent on where you at, what company, and who you're, like, the leader in the office is. The guy who, Jason, just Jason Graziani, like, he's, I check in with him at least once a year. Like, I love Jason Graziani. And the reason for that is because, like, I saw him in me. Like, he was a young, spunky, egotistical guy with a chip on his shoulder who really wanted to win, who came from nothing. Right.
And I think most of the MLM people are like that, but mm-hmm. it's just not a sound business model.
Well, here's what I would say.
Because he could do the same thing
yeah.
at the actual, like, bigger companies and make more commission and without having to recruit anybody.
Yes. So,
I only say that because I have friends that's in the insurance industry. So, it's just like.
Yeah, yeah. So, there's two different ways to go about making money in the insurance industry. By the way, it is, I think, one of the highest paying industries. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of industries say that we make the most millionaires, but in the life insurance industry, bro, whether you're recruiting or you're just selling, like if you like are the highest producer that quarter, bro, they're putting you on yachts. Like, the amount of money, the amount of partying is insane. So there's two ways that you can make money in insurance, or as far as it, like, yeah, let's just say insurance, but really I'm talking about at PHP, right? And they heavily lean towards one over the other. You can be a producer, meaning you just sell policies, right? Or you could be someone who recruits, and when you recruit your team, like, they call it going in the field, right, to sell policies. If you recruit 100 people in a month, you don't even have to go in the field with them. Someone's going to go in the field with them, and you're just going to make money. Right, with that, like, because you're selling to their friends, their family, their network.
I think that's the whole issue too. Like, you'll have a person who just was a cashier at Circle K now mm-hmm. saying he want to sell life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of stuff just isn't,
and they lack the credibility.
Yeah, so is that people steal people books of business? You got also just the income disclosure statement that shows, like, mm-hmm. hey, on average, people lose money. So that's why I say, like, for the most part, it can work. Like the things that you're talking about, mm-hmm. like, the interesting things that you gain from it, mm-hmm. you can get that. It can help you. Hey, I'm going to go into tech sales or whatever. And it's easy because now you're selling something a business need and you ain't got to mm-hmm. really convince them. The product convinces itself.
Yes.
I think that was like always the issue. Like,
yeah, bro. Life insurance. I had Patrick Bedeva say this. He would say, cars are sold. No, are bought because people want that. Life insurance is sold. Nobody wants to be thinking about death. No one wants to, like, you have to show up and this conversation, right? And so, that's another thing, bro. That shit is hard to say unless you're talking to the right people, right? There's a statistic I heard that was like 80% of people who buy a policy over the age of like 45 keep it for the rest of their life. So it's really, really difficult. I had a guy sell me insurance in college, right? At UNT. And I was like 23, 24, whatever, however old I was at. And he ended up getting out of the business. When I asked him why, he blamed me. He was like, because guys like you, they're young. But it's like, in your 20s, you think you're invincible, right? So, like, the same conversation with me, you might end up getting, $50 a month from me and you make a $600 commission. Or you could go talk to a married couple who can afford to put $1,000 away per month. You get, that's the other thing, you get all the commission up front. So, $1,000, bro, that's a $12,000 commission. Yeah.
But we also know, because we'll get back on topic, guys. But we just also know that a lot of those people
mm-hmm.
aren't getting it just because, just a lot of them just aren't good.
Correct.
Because correct. Like I said, the model makes them not get better even at selling.
Here's the thing, bro. Most people suck at most things they do. Most people are average. Most people have average intelligence. They have average style. All of that, right?
But so, I would say those people are below average in what they do. And not me just saying from an opinion mm-hmm, standpoint,
mm-hmm.
just based on the numbers.
Sure, sure. But here's the thing. That's everywhere you go, though, bro. Like, you even, and obviously I'm giving you stuff they would tell me when I'm there. Like, you go to look at the NBA, the highest earners earn an egregious amount. And then at the low end, it's significantly less, right?
Yeah, but You got to put that in perspective, because the average NBA person is still good. Like, prime example, the average starting quarterback, which is not fair, makes more than probably the best safety or whatever.
Sure, sure.
But in roles like that, those average people don't make, they making either the same or less than people that's working like fast food. So that's what I'm
getting. I see what you're saying. But you also got to look at, you got to look at the barrier of entry. The barrier of entry is low. Just about anybody can do it, bro. You're a black man. I'm a black man. Yeah. I believe every black man has made a rap song or a mixtape at some point in their past. So? I'm not going to ask you about it, but I just do believe so. But here's the thing. It probably sucks. Why? Because the barrier of entry is so low. All you need is like a laptop and a beat.
But I wouldn't say something suck because of the barrier of entry, because the barrier of entry to go work at Taco Bell is low.
But what I'm saying is, because the barrier is so low, because anybody can get into it, you're going to have a lot more people who casually get into it and don't develop the skill to get better at it. They're going to start it, suck at it, and just stop. But if the barrier to entry, let's say to start a tech startup, is $2 million, if you're going to be the kind of guy who's going to raise $2 million or get $2 million, you're not going to be casual about it. You're invested at that point.
Yeah, but I think I see what you're saying, but I think in that instance, like in those situations, those people, they have a plan. They've actually have something to add whenever they got a startup. Like you said, most of these average people, I think it's also taken into account of everybody who signed up one, like, couple of days and then dropped out. And also, so it's a lot of going on with those numbers.
Yep.
And I think, didn't Pappy Devin even sell PHP?
He did.
Yeah,
he did.
I think he sold it. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I think, like I said, like, I think two things could be true. I think, like, even PHP, they had some partners with some good insurance companies. And even Primerica has some good products. So it's like, for me, it's not like, everything is bad. It's just more so, I've always just been like, okay, some of these people, the time that they're putting in to try to recruit and show up to these things weekly, they could be making money elsewhere just doing something regular. So I like, that's always been the thing, because we know a lot of those people, and let's just be honest, a lot of people we didn't met in network marketing, outside of people who maybe had an actual professional job, people struggling. So like, that's what I'm getting. The people who, you know, they somehow got to them who got like an actual professional job and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll be all right once they kind
And their network is better too. Like the people with the professional job. So you tend to make more money. But you got to think about it. Like, I know people today who are struggling financially, right? And I don't say it, but I'm like, bro, you need a high value skill.
Yes,
the
correct.
The simplest, I don't say the simplest, one of the easiest high value skills to obtain, right, without any prior knowledge, is sales. Right. And so you get to jump into a sales vehicle that has sales training. They have all of that. Yeah. Right. Now, most people suck at selling and most people are not going to go through rejection after rejection after rejection. Mm-hmm. But it's a skill set that doesn't. Bro, you can go get a couple books. Right. And say, hey, I'm going to commit the next 12 months to reading these books and practicing what's in them every day. And you would end up being a pretty damn good salesperson.
Yeah.
But it, you know, again, what's funny? The barrier to entry is low. So most never do.
Yeah. And then what's funny about you saying that is like, that's literally what, so I have an episode that I'm editing right now with the founder of Course Careers. And that's literally what he did to get his first sales job. So I mean, you're right on that. And I do got like a lot of, it can go ping pong, go back and forth. But like I said, that can be saved for a live stream just to have fun and turn up.
Yeah.
But now you've been talking about this RPA thing.
Yeah.
What does RPA stand for?
All right. We can get into it, right? I will say this. I tell people, like, bro, I'm not a tech guy. I'm a smooth, cool, sexy, real nigga who just so happens, like tech just comes easy to me because of the way my brain thinks, right? So RPA is short for robotic process automation. Okay. So I spell it out like that. I don't tell you a damn thing, right? So think about it as coding, right? What is coding? Coding is literally just writing instructions to a computer to get it to do a certain outcome, right? So the thing about RPA is that it's more drag and drop, if that makes sense. So when you drag and drop things into these RPA softwares, like, that's the equivalent to writing 5 lines of code by dragging one thing in, right? So it's almost like hyper automation, right? And the example that the analogy that I typically give people is, let's say that you build homes and let's say that I build homes, right? let's say you build homes with brick and mortar, like the traditional route, right? Like stones and I don't know how to build a home, so I don't know. All of that stuff on your hands and knees and all that. And let's just say I have a machine, a 3D printer, right? And my 3D printer works such that I can just like say, hey, I need a wall. And I push a button, it prints a wall. And I push it two more times and I got two more walls. I sandwich them together. I say, all right, print me a roof. And it prints the roof, right? I'm still an engineer. I'm still building. I'm just building in a very simplified fashion, right? And I have a few sayings. One, if it ain't fun, it ain't for me. Like, I need things to be fun. And I do find RPA fun, but that's separate. But two, I like simplicity. I love simplicity, right? And what makes a good RPA developer and what most people struggle with when they come into my program is like, they don't keep things simple enough, right? And I say, show me someone's code and show me cluttered code and I'll show you a guy who has a cluttered mind, right? Because you got to be able to keep it simple. So I learned how to write code. That was relatively difficult, right? On a scale of like 1 to 10, depending on, you know, what language you're using. Coding can be a 10 out of 10. But when we get into RPA, it's like, I'm just dragging and dropping. I remember when I started making six figures doing RPA, I was like, wait, ain't no way, bro. This is way too simple for them to be paying me this much money. Way too simple. And it's crazy because what you could write and code and achieve and make happen within, you know, 2 to 4 weeks time, you could literally build it in RPA in 2 to 3 to 4 days. That's how much faster the software is.
Okay. So with that being said, with how you explain RPA, then I guess what is still the reasoning for traditional like software developers, engineers, like what?
Yeah. So RPA is, I've heard people explain it like glue, right? Because what it does is it kind of connects softwares that have nothing to do with one another, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure I'm staying on your question. Companies who don't, well, I'm not going to say they don't. Companies who are less likely to use RPA are the companies like the Googles, the Amazons, the Netflix. They probably have a department that uses it here and there, right? But if you have enough money to build a custom solution that's in-house that only does what you need it to do, and like no one else is ever going to use it, like you're probably going to build that, right? Because you can afford to. You can afford to spend months or years or whatever on it because you've got the revenue to lose. But RPA is more so a general type of automation, right? Have you ever heard of Selenium? Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's web automation, right? Okay. And then, so Selenium is like web automation. And then if you think about, what's another form of automation? I'm blanking on that. But think like Selenium is just for browsers, right? RPA can do what Selenium does, but it can also automate off of a web browser. Like it can automate in the desktop. Like literally I tell people, if I can watch you do it on the screen, I can then build a bot that does it. You can say, all right, you know, open a browser, click here, type into this, you know, click here, upload this file, save it. Like in you pointing, clicking, typing, it does all of that. So it's more general, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'll give you an example of a project that I did. I worked at one company, right? And they were an electrical distributor, right? So electrical supplies distributor. So they didn't build anything, but they just distribute. If electricity flowed through it, they sold it. Mm-hmm. They said, hey, we have a competitor. And they, when you go on their website, let's say you search for a light bulb, right? Mm-hmm. And on their website, it would say, hey, people who want to buy light bulbs also want these five things, right? And they said, hey, we want something similar to that. Like, we want to know what five things come up when someone searches for a light bulb or whatever product that we have. And then we want to know what five things come up on our competitor's website so that we can have, hey, people want these five things also, usually, right? So they literally wanted me to go on their website, search for all these different SKUs, all these different products, and then record and document what are the SKU numbers of the five other items that people usually buy too, right? So I built a bot that opened an Excel file, and it said this Excel file had 50,000 rows in it, right? With 50,000 different products. And then it would go to each web page and it would say, all right, what's this product? Click on it, get the SKU, close the browser or close the tab. click on the next product, open it up, get the SKU, close it, right? Something that a human could have did, but it would have taken, you know, like forever, right?
Yeah.
Correct. And so it, just something like that was very, very simple to build.
Okay. Yeah, I get you now. I get your drift about it. Because, I mean, that's the same thing that other industries go into when it gets to, like, automation. Even for security, the same thing. Being on the defensive side, we have these different automations. They work on the back end with different type of either like applications or working with the freaking APIs and pulling stuff in. So you can look at most of everything from one screen versus having to click on here, click here. So I get you on that. So when it comes to RBA, why does it seem like it's like this hidden jewel a lot of people are not talking about?
I don't think that's what it is. I think that technology changes so much and so fast. Like when you say like cutting edge technology, I don't necessarily know if I would put RPA in that category because I'm not trying to like make it hype it up and make it sound better than what it is. The average person doing RPA development today makes $130,000. They work from home and they're working less than 20 hours a week. Okay. It's like, I don't need to hype it up. Those are all true things that you can just go look up on Google.
See, right? Hey guys, while he's talking now, I'm going to look it up in Indeed.
Go for it. Yeah, go for it, bro. Now go and look it up across a few different websites. So look it up on like Google it and say and see what happens, and then go look on Glassdoor, go look on Indeed. Maybe you see different numbers, but they're earning an average of $130,000. And here's the crazy part: they're not good.
Like RPA developer.
Yep. They're not good. These people are not good, and they're earning $130,000. I don't let them pay me $130,000 because I'm better than average. So whatever the average person earned, I need more than that, at least 20%. But it's not that it's a hidden thing, bro. It's just that there's so many new things in tech coming out that like you just have heard of it or you haven't. And most people have never heard of RPA. They just kind of see me and all the kind of stuff that I do on my Instagram, all the things that I say, and they're like, oh, I've never heard of it. There's a million things you've never heard of. Just pick one. I do believe though it is the simplest technology I've ever laid my eyes on. That's what I think makes it different.
Okay, I'm going over a couple of different sites because I know Dallas had it at, let's see, what does ZipRecruiter say? This is just one site. So these numbers are like a little less. But I also say if this is going off of like 2025 numbers, then that could be why too. Because I've seen some places make salaries go down a little bit.
What did you type into Google?
I typed in RPA developer average salaries, United States.
Okay. Did like Gemini come up with?
Gemini came up with one for Dallas, but I was just trying to see.
What did it say for Dallas?
So Dallas was one. Let me go back. Dallas was 104 with top earners potentially reaching 141K.
Okay. I'm seeing entry level people like out of college making 95 to like 105. The number I've seen.
Yeah, that's what it's saying. That's what it's saying. So it's saying entry level 99,000.
But here's the thing. Let's just keep it at 99,000. RPA works such that you could go. Now, if you're cheap, I don't do business with cheap people. But if you were cheap, you could go on Udemy, spend $20, go buy any course that teaches you UiPath, and you would be good enough to get a job and start making $99,000. That's better than a network marketing opportunity. What else can you learn in 6 months or less and then go make $99,000 doing it? Like it's an incredible opportunity. Most people, though, will try to teach themselves. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They have no support. And so they get frustrated and they give up. And so that's where RPA University comes in. Like we literally walk you through the whole process. I hold your hand. And we're not just teaching you RPA, bro. Like the goal is the outcome is income. You should leave my program with employment, not I learn something new. Like that's a bunch of BS. The goal is not to learn. The goal is to earn.
So now we go from they could take a course, they go to you. I just looked briefly skimmed over a job description, but from your experience, what do people need outside of just understanding the concept of RPA? Let's say a balanced average RPA developer, like what type of skill set would they need?
You need the ability to keep things simple. You need to, let me give you a perfect example. I forget how old I was. I was in grade school, maybe third, fourth, fifth grade, whatever. We had this one day where they gathered all the students and put us in the cafeteria, and the cafeteria had a stage, right? And there were these guys up there, and they said, hey, we need you guys to give us instructions on how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right? Which sounds simple. We are kids. We've all had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, right? And so they give us like 10, 15 minutes to write the instructions down. They call this one little girl up to the stage and they say, all right, read the instructions to us as, and we're going to like, they had peanut butter and jelly and a knife and all that. They had it all on the table. Mm-hmm. And they're like, just read the instructions to us and we're going to do as you say. Right. So she said, okay. She said, all right. And she said, take the knife and put it in the peanut butter jar. And so she didn't say unscrew it. Right. So you see this guy trying to forcibly like just slam it through the, and he's like, we're trying to follow your instructions, but you skipped one. And she's like, oh, right. So you need like that. I literally take people through that exercise in my course. You need the ability to think simple, small, step by step. Like, what is the outcome that I'm looking for? And then how do I work backwards in such a way that like I get it correct? Right. You also need, this is just a developer in general. You need to be resourceful. Right. I've literally gotten jobs where like I come in, I'm a new guy on the team and I'm like, all right, so who is who? I need to make my introductions and meet everybody. And they're like, yeah, this guy, we brought you in to get rid of this guy. Don't even talk to him. I'm like, what's wrong with this guy? Why are you even talking to him? And they're like, OK, we're going to let him go. One. And I'm like, but what did he do? And they would be like, he got a project 2 months ago and he's not giving updates. 2 months later, which is today, like there's been no progress. He doesn't know what he's doing. And he never raised his hand and said he needed help. And I talked to like one of my coworkers. I was like, why do you think he's like not performing well? And he was like, man, I think he's job stacking. And I'm like, nah, bro. Because even if you were job stacking, your job would be to keep the job so you do well. It sounds like he just doesn't know what he's doing. He's not very good. He's not good at this, right? And so you need to be resourceful. And what I mean by resourceful is you need to go from, okay, I have a project, I have an assignment. I don't know how to do it. And that's okay. That happens all the time. Being resourceful is I'm going to get on Google. I'm going to get on the UiPath forums. I'm going to pick up the phone and call a friend. Worst case scenario, I'm going to raise my hand and say, hey, bro, I need help. Like, I need that. So you need that. And a lot of people don't like to raise their hand and get help, even in my course, because then they like, oh, I feel stupid or I look dumb. And I don't want, they're worried about people's perceptions of them instead of getting the job done. Right.
No, that's facts. Work with too many grown people that will just come in and day out and really not know what they're doing.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, ask the question. Your job is to not get fired. Like, mm-hmm. It's okay not to know everything.
Yeah. No one knows everything.
And I would only say to clients, like, yo, what y'all struggling with? Because, like, if y'all scared to ask, somebody will probably ask something that's going to help everybody else because y'all scared to ask it.
Yes. So
I see that all the time.
But you know what I think the issue is in the tech industry, bro? And it's so annoying. And this is why I say I'm not a tech guy. We are in an industry where people like to swing their dick around, right? They like to let you know that they're smart, right? Especially certain race of people. And I know you know who I'm talking about. They like to let you know that they're smart. And like, they like to posture as if they know everything. And if you don't know everything, they kind of do look down on you a little bit, right? But to me, it comes back to having a certain level of self-assuredness and liking yourself and being self-confident, being like, look, I don't know the answer to that. Like, I've been in meetings with people, they explain what needs to happen and explain, and I'm like, hey, could you simplify that for me? Because I'm the one who has to build it. If I don't understand the requirements, it's not going to get built. So stop using big words, bro. Like, keep it simple. Use small words. You need this data over here. What you need? You need the name, number, phone number, address. Okay, great. And then we need to put it where? Over here. And we need to format it. Okay, cool. I can do that.
Yeah. No, for sure. And the funny thing is what you're saying that is, like, I've had interviews where, like, I know they're more, the role is more client-facing, where I've made interact with clients and talk to them, whatever. And I've said to them so many ways, because one of the questions are always going to be, oh, well, how do you talk to C-levels? How are you doing that? And I'm like, I'm not interested in showing you how smart I am. I'm just trying to convey over the information in a digestible format for you to understand.
Yes.
And they always like that, because you do run into that, like, anywhere. Like, I get it, you're smart. It's a lot of people that's smart. I always tell people, somebody said something to me the other day that said they said I was smart. I was like, I'm not smart.
I'm not that smart, bro.
I just apply myself.
Yeah.
That's literally what you got to do. But no, you're right. But I say also, I think just some people, even through childhood, have probably just either been laughed or just haven't been having the safe space to ask questions. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, if I'm helping you, I'm not expecting you to know a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming to me for help. It's cool. And I do like that this sounds like it would be an easier transition than most things that people are trying to do. Because, like, prime example, the other day, funny enough, I actually brought you up to the guy, a truck driver, found one of my TikToks where I was talking about, like, Well, my guest, she was talking about don't pay for no boot camp. But in a sense, we were just talking about, like, a lot of these boot camps are, like, very high level. They're not showing you a specific skill, which is why I feel like it could be a waste of time. You got a boot camp that's showing you a specific skill on a certain job title. You probably fare better with that versus trying to learn everything you can about cyber and learning nothing in the long run. But anyways, like, even just talking to him, I was like, okay, his acumen for this is not going to be that high. He needs to start just... Not in a funny way, but I was like, he got to get some, like, fundamentals to just even understand just tech 101. And so that's why I sent him that stuff. But I was like, yo, because he was pretty much asking me so many words, like, hey, I want to eventually stop driving trucks, and I want to replace my truck salary. So I was like, okay. So I was like, hey, I got a guy that's coming on pretty soon that's going to be talking about RPA. You need to tune into that one. Maybe that's something for you to tune into. So... That's definitely what I'm like about life. Like, yeah. I just think everybody needs to know what their personality type is and what they can and what they can't do, and not always try to be like everybody else that they see on social media. Because that's the biggest thing a lot of people don't talk about is like personality types. Like, some people want to, you got a person that's more introverted who really, probably got anxiety and struggles to talk to people. And people are probably trying to say, oh, we should go get in sales. That might not be the best for them. They might need to do something where they're less like talking to people and just kind of nose down.
Something that fits with your nature.
And more task-based. Yeah.
For sure.
And so, like, once people try to figure out what their personality type is and how they fare doing better roles, I think they'll do better off in that. And that even goes into job search. Like, I got people that's killers when it comes to, like, applying. Hey, I got an interview today, tomorrow. I ain't nobody hitting nothing back. I'm like, well, you doing the stuff I told you to? Not really. I've been making up my own thing. I'm like, stick to the script.
Yes.
And once I told him to stick to the script, he was like, hey, it's been working. I know it's working. Because I do the same thing. So it's like, y'all overcomplicate things.
I appreciate you sharing that story, bro. Because I have people in my course did the same thing. And I'm like, I sometimes make myself personally responsible for their failure. And but then I'd never even stop and think, bro, wait, are you using all the tools? Are you using all the resources, or are you freestyling? No, I'm freestyling. Like one thing, and I'm going to tell you this because I don't think most people are going to do it, but I think this is the secret sauce. I tell my people, record every interview that you do.
That's what we do.
Bring it back to me. Bro, you're a smart guy. Bring it back to me. Let's go over it. I have people who will go. They'll go do 15, 20 interviews and probably make the same mistake 15 to 20 times. And I'm like, bro, I tell them, get your first 10 interviews out the way because you're probably not going to get those jobs. The objective is to improve at the skill of interviewing and becoming a people person in between those interviews. Yep. That's the whole goal.
That's what I told the truck driver. I was like, listen, learning, taking the courses or the boot camps to learn the stuff, that's the easy part. I
said, very easy.
The hardest part is going to be selling yourself to somebody and them believing that you can do what you say you can do.
Yep.
That's going to be the hardest part. And I was like, I was telling myself also is that if you're trying to get into whatever you're trying to do in cyber, you got to have some stories about some projects and some stories even from trucking that you can relate over to them in this interview.
Yep.
And so, like, that's what, like, a lot of people struggle with. It's like, when it's going to interview them, I'm just listening to them. And you just got people who either they're going to get it or the people that don't. And so it's definitely challenging. But I've talked to so many people over the last 5 years just in their career. And, like, people vary. So I know who will be successful, who won't. It was just I retweeted a tweet earlier with one of the former guests that was on the show. And she was talking about how family was like, hey, I want to get some of that tech money, yada, yada, yada. And they sent a list of things to do. And it's like, man, how am I supposed to do that and work? And she was like, oh, you don't want it bad enough, bye. And that's precisely why I don't really do, it's only like certain friends like that's got help for me in this work. Everybody else, I'll direct them to somebody else. Because it's just coming from you. That's what you run into in your family or friends. It's you saying it. If anybody else say what you the same thing you're saying, they're going to think it's gold.
I make all my friends, family, whoever, I make them go through the same process. You got to hit me on Instagram. You go through it. Like, it's the same process for everybody. And just like you, like, I can tell people who are not going to work, right? Like, I have a certain set of questions that I ask before we ever get on the phone, right? And when some people like to come in and, like, buck the system, like, I ain't trying to answer all that. I'm just, bro, you need me more than I need you. The fact that you're trying to buck the system now tells me you're not going to be a good client. You're not easy to work with now. You're damn sure not going to be, and you're not going to be willing to invest in yourself.
Yeah, I think that's the thing too. I think a lot of times, and we'll get into that in a second, Because I was texting the person I had a consult with the other day, and they was like, dude said he had like applied to 400 roles and then get hit back on nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, if I was you, I'd be beating down my door to try to sign up after what I showed up, because I had sent him a screenshot of like, mm-hmm. one of my clients like, yeah, hey, today was the first day at my new gig. I'm still waiting to hear back from the other one. And, you know, this role was like a big jump. Even the salary's a contract, but it's like, I was like, oh, shoot, that's like, what, like 125. You're like, mm-hmm. yeah. He's like, hey, that's a big jump up. And so I sent it to him. I said, hey, let me see something real quick. I said, you know, this could be you if you go ahead and invest in
yourself. I love it.
Because I'm like, I know exactly your problem. I said, either you're going to pull the trigger or you're not, or you're going to keep on finding yourself in the same thing. Because I had a mm-hmm. client before, we had a consult, and he tried to go on his own and it didn't work. He came back to me and we started landing. We landed something right away, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the thing, like with people, if you're going to get help from somebody, you book a call with this person knowing that they probably got the answers you need. If you know what you've been doing ain't working, why even waste time and waste the opportunity cost? Just go ahead and invest and reap the benefits. And the good thing is the stuff that you learn ain't just for the next 12 months. It's really for the rest of life.
That's true.
And so that's what people, so they looking like, if I pay, you know, X amount of $100,000, $2,000, over there, that's how much this is per month. If I like do that over X amount of years,
yeah,
it's going to be like $10, $5 to you.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to what you get out of it.
I've never heard anyone say it that way. I say this way, but I'm gonna say this to the camera. Self-love is self-investment, right? When people invest with me within RPA University, like they're paying me, but bro, you're investing in yourself. You're spending money to upskill and learn something that's gonna make your life better, right? So to me, when people are not willing to invest in themselves, it's because either they have a poverty mindset, meaning they want something for nothing. They want a bunch of free resources. And if you're broken, that's where you are. I get it, right? But don't stay there. Or two, like they don't think they're worthy, right? Or three, they don't love themselves. Like they don't see themselves worth putting effort into. Let me ask you this, because you're in tech, right? I imagine you've worked with people in tech, because this used to be me, where like they make the money, but you couldn't tell based on the way they dress, right? They don't carry themselves like someone who's kind of, they don't dress well. They be ashy, they be wrinkled and all this other stuff. And it's just like, I used to have the mentality of, I don't care what anyone thinks about me. And I really, for the most part, I still think that way, but it's still, and therefore I'm not going to dress in a certain way to appeal to anybody. But then the question becomes like, or the statement is like, me not putting effort into my look means that's a part of my life about myself that I'm giving no effort to. I'm not giving effort to myself, right? Because I don't think I'm worth the effort to some degree.
No, facts. I mean, shoot, I woke up super early to get a haircut this morning.
Yeah. I meant to get, I was like, man, fuck it. I'm just
Well, I looked up. He was like, man, I get you at 7:30. I say less.
Okay.
Because I walked out early this morning. So I was like, cool, I'm already up. But no, you're right. I would see that all the time. Because I think I've tweeted about this before. If I had time, I would type it in my thing. I'm saying, hey, like, you know, men and tech, whatever, like, we making, I think it was when like, I was on campus. Like, I used to work for JP Morgan as well on that campus in Plano.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, y'all, a lot of y'all, when it's tech roles, we making too much money to be like not caring by ourselves, being so mm-hmm. big. Like, especially if you're a man, unless you got some chronic illness, there's no way you should be like a certain size.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have babies. We don't really go through like postpartum like a woman would.
Mm-hmm.
It's really no excuse to get up and walk. But a lot of times, only time when this is like an asterisk or anomaly is if it's like an entertainer. Like they typically mm-hmm. know, may have like a lot of money that's where people will talk to them because of like, hey, they dress nice or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of times people, they don't pick a struggle. They have more than one going on. Like, mm-hmm. hey, cool, you can be big, but at least dress nice, at least smell good,
mm-hmm.
at least take care of yourself, at least be funny, have conversation skills.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the people's like all the struggles. I was like, mm-hmm. just only have one.
Mm-hmm.
So we see all that. I was like, nah, y'all gotta take pride in yourself. I mean, even that even goes into a point of interviewing. I always say, all right, what's your interview setup look like? Where you gonna be?
Mm-hmm.
At? What you mm-hmm. gonna? What at least you ain't gotta wear no 3-piece suit or nothing no more. But what you gonna wear?
Mm-hmm.
Even simple stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I agree, bro. To me, so I preach self love, self respect, self acceptance, gratitude, right? And some people start to take on the identity of being fat, right? Like in their head, like forget their body. I am a fat person. I've always been fat. I used to love Kevin Samuels, right? And he, you know, had, you know, he played that song with like a big woman, come on, like vroom, 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 vroom. That shit is hilarious.
Big Shirley.
Big Shirley, yeah. And so I remember he was talking to this big girl and he was like, when was the last time you were dressed for? And he was a very big woman. She was like, I ain't never been to dress for. And it's like, no, you have. You were just a child. It's probably been about 40 years. You just don't even remember. You're just so used to being big that you've taken on the identity of a big person, right? And I think that's kind of what people's problem is. It's like, you see that as you, but I believe, and I'm the only person in tech who I know saying this. So I don't subscribe to any one religion, right? But I think there's great things in all of them, right? And if you look in the Bible, it says that we are made in the image of God, right? So if I am made in the image of God, then that means I am a God. Right. Like I am a God. Right. And I get why Kanye West would say that. Right.
If that's I say, what I went to when you
yeah,
said
yeah. If I say I'm a nigga, they don't care. Right. They don't bat an eye. But if I say I am a God, it's like, who do you think you are? I love me. Right. And so if I am a God, not the God, not your God, just a God. Right. Then and if my job is to become more Christ-like. Right. That means that my job is to become the best version of myself that I possibly can. Yeah. Right. And that's what we're on the journey of. And I tell people, just like you're saying, the interview process in tech is a spiritual journey because I could give you all of the knowledge. I could download all this RPA knowledge in your head. But if you still don't feel good about you, right, well, what does your diet look like? Have you given yourself reasons to feel good about you? What have you done that has been difficult? You know what I'm saying? Like it all comes out to self-worth. And the biggest difference between people who get it and who don't is they show up on interviews. And they walk and they talk and they act like I'm supposed to be here. Right. Versus other people, they're like, oh, I'm humble. I just released a reel yesterday on that. Like, humility, like, you don't need that. The definition of humble or humility is having a low importance of oneself or one's abilities. And it's like, bro, if you don't think you're important, why the hell would I interview you and hire you?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and even to tag on to that, before the interview process, it's even the prep. The prep will help you.
Yep.
Feel prepared. But when you have bad preparation, probably going to have a bad
prepare. I don't think most people prepare for most things.
Yeah, they don't.
See?
They don't. I mean, even at the time that I didn't. Like, it's got times where, like, I know. I was like, man, I was sharp. Like, if you got time to sit down and do research and write this stuff and create whatever you want to do to kind of drive the conversation or stand out in your way, you're going to feel good about it, whether they pick you or not. Because sometimes it's just some bull in that interview just because they got somebody internal they want to go with. But.
And even then, you're still getting practice in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I did not like when I found myself in a position where, like, all right, I'm a senior. I've been doing this for a long time. And it's like, bro, if I were to interview today, if I had to interview today, I'd be rusty. You know what I'm saying? So for that reason, I will apply to jobs that I don't want just to get interviews. Yeah. Right.
And you can see, I tell people too, just stay interviewing, just see what they're looking for now.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's a good one.
Because you I work with people who've been at a company X amount of years. I'm like, oh, they ain't went there in a while. You ain't learned this, didn't this. Mm-hmm. That's like, so a lot of some of the government people, they'll run into that issue because stuff changed so slow in their environment. And so they not even getting to use some of the newer processes and tools and technologies.
That's very true.
But I always tell people, if you understand the concepts and the why behind a different tool or technology, you could be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something too. That sometimes some recruiters know and some don't. So if you can understand that, you'll be all right. But to get back into your RPA University, questions like I've been asked before, it's like, you know, I guess like, what would you say your success rate is?
That's a good question. So I started with just friends and family, right? Just people who I knew. So there was a good friend of mine, like I met him in network marketing at PHP, right? I got out, I transitioned into RPA. I tried to tell him about it. He was like, nah, bro, I'm cool. He's one of those guys who loves complexity. Okay, and I'm not. Then I start making $100,000, $250,000, $500,000 a year. And he's like, okay. And I started buying cars, paying off my house, and not paying off my part, paying off things. I bought a house, things like that. And he saw my lifestyle changing. And then he's like, okay, wait, bro, show it to me. I showed it to him, and he was like, there's no fucking way it's this simple. I'm like, yes, you, which are dumbass, you like complexity, and that's why you've been doing. Bro wrote a whole script. Like, he spent hundreds of hours writing a script to go on LinkedIn to recruit people for him. Hundreds of
hours.
You
know what's funny? There was a tool that would have did that for him without even have to write that.
Did it exist back in like 2016, 2017?
Probably so. Probably. Because all those recruiters and all them using all different type of tools to do that type of stuff.
And so like, that's his thing. I guess he gets significance from being able to solve complex problems. And so he came in within the day of us sitting down to him getting a job. 3 weeks later, he was employed. Right. So I tell the people the fastest person ever do it is 3 weeks. Right. I have a leveling system in my program, right? And level one is rookie, you know nothing, you come in and you just do this or this stuff, right? By the time we reach level four, you're applying for jobs and interviewing. I've never had someone get to level four and not get employed. Never. Now, if you get to level four and you give up and you stop applying, that ain't on me, bro. That's a discouragement issue.
So what do you say to people that's watching this right now saying he's lying or he's capping? Because like I said, they know.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I told him, they know I just don't bring people up here.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what if they say, oh, he's lying, he didn't make this money, or these people not getting no jobs, or how can they even find out from some people who've taken the program
about, for sure. Two answers to that. If you think I'm lying, I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I do not care. I don't care. Like, don't do business with me. Don't watch my reels. And that's how my mentor in network marketing was. So he was very different. It's like, we're not begging anyone to do anything. Like, mm-hmm. if what you're doing is working, keep doing it. And if it's not, maybe you want to look at what I'm doing, right? But to the other question, go watch my testimonials on my YouTube. Like, everybody who is on my testimony on my YouTube, you can go look up there. I like how you said that, bro. You were like, you can go Google my testimony. Like, you can go find them. Go on LinkedIn. Like, and my students are like, bro, here's the thing, bro. Like, I don't try to be humble. I really don't talk as much shit as I could. Like, I'm changing people. Or not I am. I'm giving people the opportunity to change their lives. Like, I have a friend who went from $75,000 a year to $300,000 a year learning the skill set of RPA. Like, I'm helping people change. Now, I'm not saying I'm not taking credit because he did the work. Yeah, yeah. He went and did it. But I'm giving you he said to me, he was like, bro, all of the best opportunities have come through you. He's like, bro, every time you do something, it works. And I just fucking copy you. He's like, I'm not taking risks. I'm going to let you do it. And then I'm going to fucking copy. Right. I had a guy. True story. His name is Joe. I love talking about Joe, bro. He was the client that I had that made me say, all right, bro, I gotta take this shit to Instagram. I gotta start building a business. Let me set the story. So I have a good friend. And I won't get into his lifestyle. He's a very interesting lifestyle, right? Especially with like he and his wife date women together and things like that. So I was like fascinated when I met him. I was like, bro, I've got to learn everything about what you're doing, right? So what I did was I did RPA services for him in his business in exchange for like learning what it is that he knows, right? Mm-hmm. And it's funny now that like I've learned it all, he don't contact me and I don't contact him, so we only call each other when we need something. It's hilarious. Like, you don't even like me. But during that point in time, I went to one of his sister's birthday parties. At this birthday party, he basically was like, all right, all the women over there, all the guys over here, you need to listen to this guy, AD. He's got an opportunity. I'm not telling you that you have to invest in it. I'm telling you, if you really want to like win in the next few years, you need to get with this guy and do what he's doing, right? So there's me, the guy, and my friend. And then there's like six or seven other guys, right? Mm-hmm. Two of the guys, and this goes back to my point of not liking working with people who work in tech. Two of the guys are already in tech. Right. One works at Microsoft and he's making six figures. The other guy works somewhere else and he's job stacking. He's making whatever he's making. And Joe was the least qualified of all of them. Joe was a roadside assistance driver, married man, father of two, lives in Fort Worth. His income was like $20,000 to $35,000, somewhere in there. Right. Mm-hmm. And when I started working, and this was the point where I was working with everybody one on one. I'm not doing one on one anymore. Right. I have like a course and I have coaches and things like that. And so when I started working with Joe, what I first realized was like, okay, he's what I call a tinkerer. Like, he gets it. Like the bot building, like, he's the kind of guy who like would take a toaster apart and like look at all the parts and then put it back together. Like, his brain works like to the personality test thing, right? Mm-hmm. He thinks in a way to where the RPA and bot building stuff just comes natural to him. I'm like, all right, great. So then we, get to the interview portion and like, to be totally honest with you, I'm like, bro, like, his self-confidence was so low. So low. He's a bigger, heavier set dude. And also, I love him, right? Nothing I'm saying here I've not said to him, right? I even called, last time I talked to him, I just picked the phone up and I was like, bro, I love you. I just love you, bro. Like, you showed me what the fuck was possible. Anyway, we get to the interview phase and he's just doing terrible. I didn't have the idea to like record the interviews and bring it back. That I hadn't had that thought yet, right? And he's getting despondent. He's not really applying for jobs. And so I'm like talking to him. And I want to make sure I said it. His self-confidence was so low that I was like, bro, I didn't say it out loud, but I was thinking, I don't think you can pull this off. I don't think you have what it takes. I don't think you're going to be successful. I'm not saying it out loud because I don't want to discourage him. And I also don't want to like validate it to myself. Right. Mm-hmm. And so he starts doing interviews. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's doing terrible. When I talk to him, I have a conversation. And I'm like, what do you think it is? And he's just like, he's telling me, like, we start role-playing answers. There's only 7 questions they ever ask in an RP interview. I know what each of those 7 questions are, and I give you an answer, okay? And so, like, he was just giving terrible answers, right? Like, I would ask him, like, okay, let's say you had a project that had to do this, right? Like, how would you do it? And he's getting so granular into it, right? And I'm like, bro, that's like me saying, hey, you're applying to be a Pizza Hut delivery driver. Tell me your experience, right? And it's like, oh, well, I got experience with putting the car in park and in drive and in reverse. And it's like, that's, we don't need to know all that. Yeah, bro, like high level, right? And then I also realized he was like, I don't have a college degree. I don't even have a high school diploma, bro. Like, I don't think I'm supposed to be here, right? And so we had a conversation about that. I gave him How to Win Friends and Influence People. I said, read this fucking book. He read the book. His very next interview, he got hired. Very next thing, I said, tell me about the interview. What happened? He was like, bro, we barely talked about RPA. I said, what y'all talk about? He was like, we talked about how, like, he loves to go to, like, casinos and gamble. And he loves to, like he can feel the energy in the machines and he can tell when it's going to hit. And I was like, he was like, yeah, that's all we talked about. And he was like, bro, like, the book talks about, like, be interested in them. Let them talk. Yeah. People like people who let, people like to talk about themselves. And people like, we can have a whole conversation. And I say nothing. I just ask you questions and let you talk about yourself the whole time. And then you would walk away from the conversation like, man, AD is a pretty cool dude. He read that book and got employed. Starts making $90,000. I was like, holy shit. If he can do it, anybody can do it. I hired a coach. I paid $4,000 to a marketing coach to get on Instagram and start doing all this stuff. And like, literally, that is how I got where I got today. So like, that is like my most significant success story. The guy literally, I did not think he was going to do it. He didn't think he was going to do it. And he did it, bro. Like, low confidence, no tech back, no nothing. And I'm just like, bro, if you can do it, literally anybody can do this. Anybody. You know what I'm saying? And so I love that. And that's the, like, that's really why I do this business, bro. Like, I could go and just stack up contracts. You know what I'm saying? And I don't need this. I don't need to do this. Like, I've been good. I've been straight. My family, we do what we want. Both of me and my wife, we drive luxury cars. I fucking walk around all day in a Versace robe. You know what I'm saying? Like, I live a grand life. And it's not because of RPA University. I've been doing this, right? But my favorite part of doing all of this is working with a guy who goes from a place of, like, I don't know if I can do this, to, like, holy shit, I did it. And then, like I feel like, I don't watch boxing, but, like, you know, at the end of the match, right? It's the one opponent, the ref, the other one, and then you raise the guys. I feel like the referee in that situation. Like, I'm raising your hand, bro. You did it, but, like, I'm there and I helped you. And it's like, bro, I love that feeling. That is why I do this shit, right? And I just don't think that, like, if I was lying, it's like you wouldn't hear this passion in my voice and things like that, right? So everybody that I've ever worked with, you can go and look up their LinkedIn. And bro, it's the simplest technology there is. Like, if there were something simpler, I would shut down RPA University. I would go and spin up another company and I would name it whatever the fuck that technology is, university. And that's what I would teach people, because it's not about being overly complicated. It's not about being super intelligent. It's about learning minimum skills that you need to learn in order to get the job and then get out there and start interviewing and make your mistakes, take your lumps, and just keep going until you get to the point to where, like, you've messed up, you know, all the questions they're gonna ask you, you know what not to say, you know what to say, and then you just keep going, bro.
Yeah, I was gonna message you when you was talking about the passion. I was like, hey, Matilda Daddy was passionate too.
I haven't seen that movie in so long.
Really? Man, that's a cult classic right there.
Yeah, that's one where she gets spun around by her hair or some shit like that. Yeah,
she got powers, but she, like, her dad's Danny DeVito. Mm-hmm. He had used car salesman rolling back the miles and O'Donnell and stuff like that. Miss Trunchbull. Miss Honey,
I've seen it, it's probably been 20 years since I've seen that movie.
And I always go back and watch, like, all my old, like, I don't know, when I was a kid, like, Major Payne's one of my favorite movies. So,
bro, my family just watched that. So, side note, my wife, she's mixed, right? So she looked black, but she mostly Caucasian inside. And so our kids, like, I grew up in the ghetto. My kids are not in the ghetto, okay? We live in a very nice zip code. And so, like, we'll watch movies. And, like, my son would be like, you can tell that he doesn't, like, identify as black. He's like, I'm black, but I'm not like these guys over here. And I'm like, no, you're classy. You're still black. You're just, you have class.
He's not OJ. Wait, OJ. You know, Hope got the part, I'm not black, I'm OJ.
Oh yeah, 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 okay. yeah. But it's a class thing, and all races have class, right? So yeah, man, we literally just watched Major Payne maybe like a month or two ago. I love that movie.
That and I always go back and watch like, well, my girls are getting a little older now, so where they'll watch like movies and stuff like that. So like I'll try to introduce them some stuff. So like I had it like on the Goofy movie the other day.
Oh, man, that's my shit. You old? You like, know you're old. Right? We sitting here.
I'm happy. Look, like Charles somebody say, man, ain't nothing wrong with getting old.
Yeah.
I don't know why people don't want to get old. I'm fine with being old. Look, yeah. It's a blessing, man. From where the city I'm from, mm-hmm. people dying every day, and mm-hmm. not even seeing 2021, like mm-hmm. to be almost 33 at the end of the month. Like I'm happy. Like
straight up. I'm old. I go to sleep at 9 o'clock, bro. So I'm glad we could do this during the day. Like this is amazing.
I honestly just get it in. Like I do. This time, whenever time I have free time to record here, late night, live mm-hmm. stream, whatever, I'm getting it in. That's all I like to do. So, RPA jobs, are they, from based on the market now, are they mostly remote?
Yes.
Are they on site?
Yes. They are I've never had anyone graduate and go get employed and have to work on site. Never. Not one time. But you also got to think about it like this, bro. I don't know if you knew this. There's a shortage of 4 million developers in America right now. Like that's why like this H-1 visa thing like is so big within the government, right? There's a shortage. Now, that's not all RPA developers. That's developers. That's people who develop software, right? RPA is just but a sliver of that. And so I tell people, bro, when you're a doer, to me, there's three kind of roles in tech. You're either a builder, like a doer, you build things. You are engaged in technical activities. Mm-hmm. Or you are like someone who facilitates that. Like you're like a project manager, scrum master. Like you're not doing the technical stuff. Maybe you're a C-suite executive. Like you're a decision maker and things like that. Right. Or you're a go-between. You're someone who's technical enough to communicate what they're saying to these people and go back and forth. That's it. There's only three roles. Of the three, the hardest ones to replace, I'm being very general when I say this, are the doers. So if you are, and that's another thing, there's a difference between being a doer and being very good at what you're doing, right? Most people suck at most things. That's what I believe. And so when you are able to do RPA or anything at a high enough level, you're not playing on the same playing field. Like you get to cut corners. They will do things to keep you because it's incredibly hard to find somebody else. Everybody can say they do RPA and all the shit on their resume. Few can actually do it well, do it consistently, and get the job done.
Now, as you say, good at RPA, because you framed it as such to be something that, you know, anybody can learn.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, what is the difference between somebody that's good at RPA and somebody that's bad if it's, you know, essentially so simple to learn?
Well, again, bro, so let me tell you this. So I had a guy reach out to me, and this was years ago. RPA University wasn't rocking and rolling how it is today. I think he was from New York, Middle Eastern dude. And he was like, hey, bro, I got my cousins here in the country. He's new here from so-and-so. And he's got a wife and kids to take care of. And we were wondering if you could, like, help him get a job. And I'm like, okay, what do you mean? He was like, look, we want to go set up these interviews. And he's going to be on the camera. But we want your voice to be fed in, and you're like, he's just trying to match your words. I was like, bro, that's the stupidest shit I've ever heard. One, I'm not doing it. Two, he's lazy. He should just go. Like, it's not that hard to learn, bro. Go learn it, right? And so I say that to say that guy probably put RPA on his resume, and he may have got in and gotten employed. He knows nothing about RPA. There's a lot of guys like that, right? So when people are like, oh, there's a lot of competition, that's how I know somebody sucks. They can't interview, they suck at competition, and they're not good at anything that they do. They're focused on competition. Oh, there's a lot, it's so much competition. Bro, did you ever see the Last Dance documentary?
Yeah.
Okay. There was one part in there when they were talking about Jordan, like his first like rookie year or his sophomore year on the Bulls. He was like, bro, after the games, the players would go and do cocaine together in the hotel. The average person on the Bulls at that time sucked. They were just like hooping well enough to keep their employment. You know what I'm saying? So like when you look at it from that perspective, you could have RPA on your job title. That doesn't mean that you're skilled, right? So going back to answer your question, bro, what makes a big difference is one, can you consistently get the job done? Can you, or do you just have it on your resume and you just hope they don't give you nothing difficult? Because when you start, they're going to give you like small pieces. It's not going to build this whole project. It's going to be like, hey, We got this bot with like 45 different activities in it. Around activity 10 is messing up. We need you to go in and just fix that. Because that's entry-level shit, right? Can you do that? And then can you finish a project? Can you bring a project across the finish line? And when it really comes down to is resourcefulness, like I said earlier. If you don't know how to do something, are you able to get on Google? Are you able to pick up the phone? Or are you able to put your ego inside and say, I need help? Like, that literally, to me, is the biggest difference. And do you have a curiosity about you? Are you naturally curious about, like, I tell people, if all you do in my course is the work that I assign you to do, you're not going to be that great. Like, you need to be experimenting with things. You need to be trying new things and being like, hey, I've never seen this. I wonder what it does. Let me try. Now I know. Get on YouTube, try different things, experiment. That is what makes a great RPA developer, in my opinion.
Okay. And then this other question too, I was thinking about, you know, we're here with AI, machine learning.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see for the outcome or the future of RPA with AI pretty much getting more sophisticated at a rapid pace?
Mm-hmm. I like the way you ask that question, because a lot of times people are like, do you think it's going to replace it? No. Here's what I believe is going to happen. What I'm seeing is that the RPA vendors, they are like integrating AI into RPA, right? So for example, let's say that you have a process and you got to, you know, open an Excel file, extract information, upload it into a website, press submit. Let's just say that's what it is. Mm-hmm. You, in the beginning, would need to know, like, okay, based on what the project requirements are, here's how I need to structure everything. Now, they have it to where, like, you can just type in, like, hey, I have a project where I have to extract information here, and it'll build the bot for you. And now all you got to do is modify it a little bit. So that's what's going on. It's so cool, so crazy. But what that's going to do is it's going to make the people who already aren't very good, the people who already suck at RPA, it's going to make them worse.
Because they won't know how to do
it. They don't need to learn, right? Like, the reason I'm so good at it is because I started by writing code first. I was doing something that was difficult. And then this shit came along. It was like, oh, I can do this. They don't have that. It's just easy peasy from the jump, right? And so they don't have to learn the hard way. It's just all of this is here. Have you ever heard of, seen the movie called Idiocracy?
I don't think I've
seen it. Bro, it's such a good movie. Go check it out. My physical therapist told me about it. But basically, it's about a movie about, like, a guy. He's in the military and he gets frozen, right? And they forget about him. So, like, thousands of years goes by. And so he wakes up and it's hilarious. And, like, the world is super far advanced, but because the world is advanced with so much technology, everybody's stupid. Everybody's stupid. And I think this guy ends up becoming, like, president or something like that. Like, and he was stupid in his time, right? But he's just, like, he's able to manipulate everyone because, bro, it's a great movie. And I think that's where, I literally think that's where the world is going.
I have to check it out because that's kind of like a low-key version of Encino Man, except the person's not a caveman.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's cool. So, if you were on an elevator with some prospective clients, what would be your pitch to come do RPA?
As in they're trying to get into tech, right? I would say, look, bro, if you want a career where you can make $250,000 working less than 20 hours a week, working remotely, you want to travel the world, you want to live a life of luxury, you want to have time, you want time and money, right? If you want a career that allows you to have it time and money with the least amount of effort possible, you need to come holler at me. RPA is the thing for you.
And I know they're not going to let me live if I don't ask you this. Because we keep on using these big numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You say these big numbers, are these people either working multiple contracts or their job stacking?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Again, the average is earning 130, right? But let's say you don't even get average. Let's just say you end up getting a job where you're making $100,000, right? Bro, I promise you, there's not enough work in the world for an RPA developer to work 40 hours a week. There's not that much work in the world, bro. Like, you know how often you get blocked on a project? I've been on a project and been blocked for weeks. Mm-hmm. At this point, they're just paying me to just be on payroll. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you want to use that extra time for leisure, you can do that, right? But if you're making $100,000 and you're working 10 hours a week, like, it would be nothing to put another 10 hours a week in and get another $100,000.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, but the fact that you said that, a lot of people won't say that.
Yeah.
They'll just say they got one job, which... There are people, they're rare in every industry to have like one main job where their total comp is very high and even straight their base up. Is very high. Mm-hmm. But those aren't all the people that's most time talking on interviews and podcasts. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason why.
I wouldn't want to be those people because I think they're working really hard. Like I saw something like a press release from Amazon, and I think they're paying all their software developers. I could be wrong. So fact check me on this. Like $300,000 on the low end. Right. But like how many hours do you think they're working per week?
Oh, yeah.
It ain't 40.
Oh, yeah. No, they're at the Amazon sweatshop, they're working hard.
I don't want that.
They used to have a buddy that used to work for Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely was. Matter of fact, a lot of people that I knew that used to work there didn't like it, but they really took it strategically because the big sign-ons and, you know, attracting
I bet you Amazon has over a quarter million employees. It's just different when your organization is that size. You know what I'm saying? It's a totally different environment.
Yeah, I think most big companies are like that. I mean, yep. Now, granted, there are some that's cool, but it's just like, you know, for me, I always see, like, certain companies I already know are old white men running based on, like, policies or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not mm-hmm. really friendly for
mm-hmm.
different communities that have to do other stuff for families or whatever, or just want you to wake up and waste time driving to the office just to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those type of things. Like, for example, one of the reasons why I didn't like JP Morgan was the fact that, hey, I was the only person in the Plano office. All the rest of my people stayed in Columbus. So mm-hmm. I was like, I'm doing what I could do at home. Which, mm-hmm. And I only had to come up there 2 times a week. But like mm-hmm. at home, I'm doing the same thing when I meet with them virtually.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be different if people was here.
That's the banking industry too, though. So like, that's the banking industry is so interesting, bro. It is the only industry that I've ever seen where technology is squandered. Like, they see tech coming, they're like, nah, bro. We're going to buy it and shut that shit down. Because we don't want change over here.
So I will say that some of them have matured in that thought process.
Because
mm-hmm. I'm still in that area at a certain company.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say some of them were mature. They were late. Like, JP Morgan was like, they was using cloud stuff, but then they started mm-hmm. ramping up more to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, yeah, you do see a lot of stuff that people just have that, like, they're not even using. They just buy stuff, they're not using it, or they sticking to their guns.
Well, here's the thing, bro. It's not even about buying it. I used to bank with this company called Simple, and I loved it, right? Because your money would hit your account, and you get to break it up into like different pockets. It was phenomenal. Me and my wife used that for years. It was great. Not even years, maybe a year. And then they got acquired, right? And the CEO was like, hey, don't worry, we're not going to change anything. And they shut that bitch down. So it's not about buying or not use. It is, we're going to shut this down, and I get it. I'm not going to lie. I might do the same thing if I were them, because it's like, as an entrepreneur, not even that. Because once I buy you, you're not competition anymore. But it's just like, nobody wants change for the sake of change. And so like, if I am a rich, powerful white man or whatever, and I'm sitting at the top of an industry, not just a company, an industry, and I want things to stay exactly as they are so I can have my predictable revenue and I can have my predictable quarters and I can have my predictable profits. I don't want change. So I get it. You know what I'm saying?
And that's where I see where the new companies start to thrive. Like, for example, honestly, probably before the pandemic, I didn't know what a Stripe was. But now look at Stripe. One of the biggest fintech names out there.
Yeah.
And then if we go to recent news, it's a company called Wiz.
Yeah.
Wiz just got acquired by Google for
$32 million. I don't know if I heard about that. Okay, so I saw your post. What is Wiz?
So Wiz is, and I'm going to, so I don't butcher it, so I actually want to inform the people on this because I'll be talking about it again soon. It is a,
I'm not going to lie, bro. I don't really keep up with tech news like that. Like, my life is so enjoyable, I just keep up with myself. But I'm starting to keep up with it because it's valuable to the people. It's valuable to the people who want to be in the industry and stuff like that.
Yeah, that and, you know, where money is moving in the stocks is a lot of times. So Wiz is pretty much a cloud security platform.
Okay.
Previously, last year, Google tried to acquire them, I want to say for like $23 billion or something like that, and they sold them, they turned them down.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of months ago, Wiz acquired a company called Daz for like almost $500,000. No, not half, I'm sorry, almost $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
And now, yesterday, they got acquired for $32
billion. Mm-hmm.
And I think they negotiated in there, hey, let's do some retention stuff to keep our employees here and all this other stuff. So mm-hmm. they did it like smartly, but mm-hmm. that company was founded in 2020.
Really? That's crazy, bro. That's crazy. I don't ever see myself being the tech venture startup guy, but like, bro, there's insane amounts of money. Well, insane amounts of
that
money.
And literally, because when you, like you say, let's keep it simple. All Wiz did, they had people that worked at all these various places, mm-hmm. and they started solving problems. Mm-hmm. That's literally what they did. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably what a lot of times where we see the new companies come with solving problems.
That like, makes sense. That makes sense.
When it came to, when I think about Stripe, think about like a person like me in a service-based business or whatever, how easy it is to make you a Stripe account, make payment mm-hmm. links, and get paid like that.
Exactly.
You know, back in the day, to get paid on your phone, you have to go get the Square reader and people have to swipe
that's
like
this.
That's
a good point. So that's a very good point. That's a good. They saw a big gap in the marketplace, and they just decided to fill it.
Yeah. So I think everything's about like adaptation, and so that's. Mm-hmm. I think I even see like a lot of that stuff. What they'll be doing with AI when it comes to you know my industry being in cybersecurity and like all different things. I think the people who know stuff, like you said, it's gonna help their job. It'll be like a little bit more efficient, and it'll be some people that need to keep learning. I think that was just pretty cool when I saw that. Like my eyes, like dang. Mm-hmm. It's a real deal. It's not that old of a company, so mm-hmm. for sure. But I want to ask you, and I always ask my guests this, man. We got two things. One, I know you recommended some books. Mm-hmm. So what'll be two or three books that you probably would recommend for them to read?
Bro, my favorite, and it's my favorite book of all time. It might be dethroned soon. It may not be. It's Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker, right? I've been accused, and maybe I am, of being a black and white thinker. I just like to simplify things down. I like to boil them down. And what I love about this book is he goes into what they call the wealth files, right? And he says that, like, you could make a lot of money, but if spiritually and mentally you've set, you're the kind of person where your internal is set to poverty, you will find a way to be poor, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He talked about how his dad would, like, do construction and, like, build, like, properties and, like, neighborhoods and shit. And he would, some years they'd make $700,000 a year, right? And then he was good. His dad would come home happy as all outdoors. And then they'd spend all the money. Now his dad is grumpy. And then once he found a new contract, he's happy again, right? And so he basically says, like, it's 17 different principles. And he's like, rich people think this. Poor people think that. Rich people think this. Poor people think, and it's, bro, I love it. It is, I read that book every year, at least once a year, right? Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite principles from it is poor people think either or, rich people think both, right? And I'm not going to go that far. But yeah, that's like one of my principles. It's like I don't have to choose. I can have everything. I can have both. I can have a great life. I can have a great sex life. I can have a great relationship with my children. I can have a great career. I can have a great like business. I can also have a great job. At the same, I can have everything that I want. As long as I'm strategic about how I get there, and I keep it simple, I overcomplicate it, right? So that's definitely a book I highly recommend. Any other books? I also believe that like don't be reading books for the sake of reading books. Like have an outcome that you're looking for, and then go read a book based in that vein, if that makes sense. And I don't know if all the books that I read, like all I do is consume knowledge. Like how I said, I'm not a tech guy. Like I am a what I geek out about, like what I'm reading about and looking up on YouTube is human relationships, human nature, human relationship, dating, sex, like all of that. Like, how can I, like, there are some men out here who like, true story. I went to a business conference in August of last year and I'm meeting these men and like they're millionaires and some billionaires are in the room too. And I'm listening to the way that they're talking like about or with their wife. And I'm just like, bro, she runs you. She controls that whole relationship. She feels so unsafe and like you don't even see it, right? Like, how is that the case? And then other men have like women falling at their feet. Like, how? Like, how can this guy walk in a room and everybody admires and respects him? This guy walks in a room and like he's a joke and no one even cares. Like, what's the difference? Like, that's what I geek out about. Like, I love human nature and it just so helps in interviews and things like that, right? But let me get back on your question. So, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's a classic. And just because, like, this is one of the most impactful books I've ever read, Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. He is a former FBI hostage negotiator, and so he just talks everything about negotiation. And the crazy thing about it is, like, he's in a position where he has to win the negotiation. He has to, because if he doesn't, this person dies, right? So, like, you take those same skills and you can use them in interviews.
Yeah, for sure. And It's funny enough, with your MLM background, I thought you were going to say Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Oh, bro, that book changed my life. Yeah, bro.
But see, I don't fool with it because of Robert Kiyosaki. Because I know for a fact the MLM industry paid him so they could push the book.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do this then. Let's do this. I'm going to switch out my third one because I don't think they need to read that book. I've heard this. I can't verify it, right? I know you like to verify things. The guy, this is an exclusive, okay? Your people should thank me for this, all right? The guy that he's referring to as Rich Dad in that book, right? His name is Keith Cunningham, right? That's what I've heard, right? Like, Keith Cunningham is a real person. I've seen him. I've got his books. Bro, when you talk about a guy, he's like, he was on stage at this business event that I went to in August. And he was just like, look, I got these businesses. Am I passionate about them? No. Their job is to produce profit. I have my employees report out to me. I'm not checking in on you. I'm not your mother. I'm like, bro, this guy is cold. Oh, I do. But you can tell he's been caked up and making money and doing what he want to do for years and years. He has a book called The Road Less Stupid. I would highly recommend that book. He basically talks about how, like, a lot of our bad decisions come from us just being really excited and just pulling the trigger, right? And we don't ever stop to think and say, okay, what are the consequences? What could go wrong? What could go right? Like, and he literally talks about the activity of building in thinking time to your day. Sitting down with a journal and a list of questions that you're thinking about. Bro, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, for sure. I think, like you said, the objective, like for me, I don't really have, sometimes don't necessarily always have like the quiet time to want to read. So I do a lot more audiobooks now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes if I need to move it to like slower than whatever speed, because sometimes I'm listening so fast, I'm like, okay, I need to hear that again.
Bro, let me give you a hack that helps. Now, you gotta find time to do this, like just 30 minutes. Get the audiobook and the physical book. Right. Because there's a difference between reading and comprehending. Yeah. And so if the words are on the page and you're looking at them and you're hearing it, like you're putting two inputs into your brain.
Oh, yeah.
Bro, it is phenomenal. That's how I read my books now. And bro, it's almost to the point where, like, if I can't listen to and read this at the same time, I don't even want to listen to it.
Yeah. So when I interview prep, like, I'm normally taking out a tablet, old school style, and thinking about stuff and writing it down. So it stick.
Yeah.
It's a reason why it's called spelling.
Yeah.
That was something I brought up, like, you know, people talk about like witches and all the stuff like that, but it's a reason why these things are called spelling words.
Mm.
And we don't never really think about it. And those are sometimes when my brain works, I'll go back and look at stuff like, I looked up spelling words. I looked up why are curse words.
Interesting.
Because just like the only curse word really is like, damn. Everything else you say like derogatory or profane language, but then you got to say like, why? Where did it come from?
I like curse words. I'm a fan of them. I think we need to use more of them. You know what I'm saying? I can curse on here, right?
You've been cussing.
Oh, okay. Well, shit. I can keep going. Because there's a difference between me saying, hey, HD, like, I'm angry. And me saying, I'm pissed the fuck off. Like, those are two different things. And I'm like, we lose color, right? And then also, when you go to corporate America, it's like, no one talks like a real human being. They all talk corporate talk. Which means I'm going to use 100 words when 5 words would do. What it is. Like, I just don't know.
I've been in some industries where, like, they kind of talk how they probably would talk to their buddies.
And how big was the company?
Good size.
What's a good size?
I would say, Fortune 100, Fortune 50, whatever, like, in them things.
Not revenue. I'm talking about a number of employees.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know the number, but I'm saying I would say, like, it's relatively, like, a larger company.
And was this, when you're talking about, like, was this, like, people who were like in high level positions that they were hard to replace?
I would say that.
Honestly,
I don't think nobody's hard to replace.
Nah, bro, you're hard to replace. You wouldn't have, the fact that you are successful as you are, as long as you, like, there's something called the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? Where basically people who suck at something think they're good. And then the people who are really good at things tend to say, nah, I'm not that good. I have a lot of room for growth and improvement. That's you, bro. Like, if you weren't good, you wouldn't have been in this industry this long. Like, what is normal to you is incredibly challenging to the average person, right? And so that's why I think you're saying that. These people are in privileged positions to where it's like, let's say, like, if you're the number one sales guy in the company every year for a decade, you can get, you can talk kind of how you want to talk. You know what I'm saying? If you're a new budding rookie, like, you better get in line and don't ruffle too many feathers.
Yeah, no, I think it's sometimes I look at it, it's like, I don't think they nice like that. It's like if you on the bench and the person above you is starting, but it's more political than they actually being better than you.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think they
I got you. I don't like red tape. I don't like corporate policy. If I can't come in the room and say, all right, this is not working, I don't think this is a good idea, this is dumb, this is what we, if I can't talk like that, I don't want to work there.
Yeah, yeah. No, I definitely feel you. It's like I said, this stuff is always fun because, I mean, you learn so many different things going in from being green
mm-hmm.
to like being mature and like, okay, I know when you're trying to finesse or play me, so I'm going to play the game too because I know how to play it. It's not my first rodeo.
Mm-hmm.
I think things drastically change when you learn how to play the game. Mm-hmm. And to me, it typically comes after a layoff. If you ever get laid off or something, that's normally when you wake up and you like take the red pill, as they want to call it, and
mm-hmm.
learn everything. But real quick, last question would be,
yeah,
what's something that I didn't ask you that you're surprised I didn't ask you?
It would be tech related. I mean, you asked me about my success rate. You asked about RPA. I don't know, bro. That's a good question. I mean, my goal in coming here today was to be as present as possible. Yeah. Like, I didn't want to prepare.
Yeah, they both know. Like, neither of us prepared. Yes, I mean,
I wasn't gonna say you didn't prepare, but yeah, but I don't know, bro. I mean, but again, how we got in contact? Like, my guy told me about you, and it was like, bro, that y'all would have a real conversation. It'd be dope. It wouldn't be like a political conversation, you know? Because we've talked about certain people in the industry. You know what I'm saying? And this is not that, right? So I don't have a good answer for you to that question.
Bet. So where could the listeners follow you at, and then where could the viewers like follow you at as well?
For sure. You can follow me on Instagram at the RPA guy. That is THE, R as in Robert, P as in Paul, A as in Aaron, guy on Instagram.com. And on there, I have a mixture of, like, I do a lot of talking about tech, and I do also a lot of talking about masculinity, right? So if you like the masculinity part, and by the way, you can, I don't know if you've noticed this on YouTube yet. You're on YouTube a lot. You've probably seen it. They got like the at symbol now, right? So it's like at whatever your channel name is. So I'm at the RPA guy on YouTube and on Instagram. And then that's like tech stuff. And if you want the masculinity content, then you can find me at King's Corner Podcast TV on YouTube. And I think it's just at King's Corner Podcast on Instagram. And I'm going to just say it here. Like, my goal, like, I just so happen to be good at tech. It comes easy to me and all that. My goal is to be the world's number one masculinity coach, period. It is. There's pride in being a man. We make the world. We keep the world running. And that's really what I want to do. That's the message I want to get out there. And I want to help you make a lot of money in tech so that you take that money and then you invest it in you, your family, your community, all that good stuff.
Bet. Well, all this information will be in the description, but I appreciate all y'all for rocking with us. Until next time, let's stay textual, and we out. Peace.